Welcome to Forbes' presentation of Reasonable Doubt, the best hour in the universe.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. And welcome to the best hour in the universe. It's, what the hell? Reasonable Doubt. There you go. Mark Garagus. We're doing too many podcasts.
Boy, have you had a day?
Every day is a day for me, Mark. But I know you're having a day. Where are you?
I'm having a day, but Dave, you have the best hour in the universe. It can only get better, apparently, from what it sounds like. What's the matter?
Oh, just, I realized I had to get up really early this morning and do a radio tour. And if you want to screw me up, you just screw up my sleep. And then I'm always kind of chasing it from that point on for the rest of the day. You screw me up in the morning and I'm just sort of chasing it. I'm at my best when I can just sleep in. And that's why whenever I would do a project or something and they go, the call time's at 7. And I'll go, what time do you need me on set? And be like, well, 10 o'clock, but hair and makeup. I'd always go, just let me sleep and I'll be so much better when I get some wings.
I'm in the position that a good rest is better than any amount of makeup or hairspray in what little hair I have left. I would agree with that.
You absolutely look better. You sound better. And you can. And the first thing that goes, it's interesting. When you're sleep deprived, the first thing that goes is your memory. You cannot remember the name of the podcast you're doing. So, Mark.
I just noticed. So, wait. But are you a guy who exercises in the morning? I haven't ever asked you this. You do exercise in the morning? You walk in the morning?
No. If I am having a great day, I get up on my own somewhere between 8:30 and 9. I have a little coffee. I check a tweet and an email. Then I get my dog, and I start chugging down the street with Philly cheesesteak. At some point, Paulette walks by. We high five. Not a word or a glance is shared between the two of us, just a high five. And,
because it's a little early for an extended conversation in Lock and Yacht.
A little early. Sometimes, if it's a little later in the afternoon, she'll stop and show me pictures of tile on her phone. That's her move.
Right, because she wants to get your advice.
She's picked out some tile.
Bulldoze or not. Yeah,
that's right. We'll do that for a while, and then it'll be on my way. I'll have a little more coffee, and then it's off to work I go. But this particular morning, I had to do one of those radio tours, which is not only do you get up at 5:45, you're not going anywhere for the next 2.5 hours. But where are you?
I'm at my office in Providence, about to run to the train station after Reasonable Doubt to take the train down to New York. And then I've got to be in Florida. So I have got depositions in both spots. And then I've got a court appearance on Friday in L.A. But they tell me you were traveling, because I tried to punt us, but they said Adam is traveling. I love it when they say that.
I'm going to Road Atlanta to do a car race, a big one, one of the biggest vintage races in the country. It's called the Midi, and it's at Road Atlanta, sort of legendary racetrack where Paul Newman won all his championships. Back in the day, they would always have the runoffs, they call them, at Road Atlanta. It's a great track that I've never driven on before, so I have to try to... It takes a while to really get some laps on a track that you've never driven on before, so I have
that. How big's the track?
It's 2.5 miles and a little change, so it's a little bit bigger than most tracks. 2.54, says Gary. Yeah, that's where I covered the four with the change. 2.54, and
were you kidding? Were they making a liar out of you for a tenth of a mile?
Yes, it's a little bit, and it's a fast track. You can always kind of tell if you check the times on how fast guys do laps on 2.5 miles.
What car?
I am driving a Datsun Bob Sharp 610, which is the older brother to the Datsun 510, which is Bob Sharp's the guy, obviously, Newman started with in Connecticut. And Paul drove out at Road Atlanta, and his driving partner, Jim Fitzgerald, drove out of there too. And so there's a lot of history and Datsun and Nissan and Sharp and Newman and everything else at Road Atlanta. And the mark is going to be Datsun. So that's their marquee. That's who that's who they're going to focus on. You know, they always pull out a manufacturer. And so they're going to go Nissan and Datsun. So they want me and my Nissans and my Datsuns there. So
does the Datsun brand exist other than the cars that were made at the time that are now more valuable?
They say they're going to bring back the Datsun brand, but maybe only in Asia and possibly Europe, you know. So a lot of these companies realize that, hey, we got the 240Z and we got the Roadster and we got some pretty cool vehicles from back in the day. And they're starting to get in touch with their heritage. They just actually are going to be the brand featured at the Rolex Historics at Monterey. First time Japanese cars ever been featured. It's always Porsche or Rolls-Royce or Bentley or Maserati.
240Z was, I was always a fan of the 240Z. I thought that was a heck of a car.
There are going to be a lot of them out there at Road Atlanta, and they're fast.
Really?
And those guys drive them fast. So if you guys want to come by, say
hi. Would they be selling them too, street legal 240Zs?
I don't.
What does that go for now?
A nice 240Z that would be 70, 71, 72, and 73 were the years of the 240Z. Then they went 260, 280. Sound
right.
A lot. See, well, you know, at the beginning when I went, what show is this? I should have just said CarCast. A nice Z car, and now's the time to get a Z car. If you're thinking about collecting a car and you don't have, you know, 500 grand for a Ferrari, a really nice clean Z car is 25 to 35 now. They've gone up
from a bargain.
They've gone up a lot over the few years.
I'm thinking back, because I remember that was back when Porsche had gone to the 73, I think was the last one before they went to that, the rear taillight that said Porsche on it, and that was the 74, but the 73 and a half, I think, was the last, and that was I think back then that was 9,000 new, and the Z was probably what, about 3,500 new back then?
Yeah, I would say probably low to mid threes, or 3,500. I think under 4 grand.
25 now?
Well, you used to be able to get them for 6 grand all day long, and now they're starting to move up. So they're a really, you know, good, clean, nice examples are passing 30, but they're still well under 40, and you can definitely find some nice 240Zs. And again, they'll be over 50 in 3 or 4 years. So if you're thinking about it, now's the time. So why don't you tell us, give us an update on everything. I hear
let's start with Trump.
All right.
And the legal team bracing for Cohen and his cooperation. If you had you're a great connoisseur of the human condition. If you had to guess, does Michael Cohen, if squeezed, does he cooperate or not cooperate? What's your one man's opinion?
I guess we'd have to figure out what he has to lose, or if he has his freedom to lose.
He has his freedom. I'll set it up for you. You're Michael Cohen. They've executed search warrants at your hotel and your office. You represent the president. You've been known to be his go-to person for the last decade or so. Your lawyer is probably telling you, hey, we've been cooperating. If they execute a search warrant, that's usually a pretty good indication that they're getting ready to indict you. And then, you know, the client says, well, why would that be? And you would say, well, you've cooperated, or we've cooperated, we've turned over documents, and now they want to make sure that you're not holding anything back because they're getting ready to make a presentation to the grand jury. So then I say, you know, if I'm the lawyer, Michael Cohen, I say to my lawyer, well, if I'm going to get indicted, what are they going to indict me for? And they'll say, well, there's probably an assortment. Bank fraud, wire fraud is always the go-to counts. Maybe there's a money laundering count. Maybe there's something else. Depends on what's in your records. And then I say, well, can I go to prison? They say, yes, absolutely. Under the federal sentencing guidelines, even though they're not binding, they're suggestive. And you, based on having no criminal history and a money laundering, starts you at a level 19 by the time you get done with all the goodies, tax service, and service charge. You're probably looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 years. So you say to yourself, I'm married, I got kids, but I'm going to go away for 10 years. Then the lawyer says, well, do you think the president would give you a pardon?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if he pardoned Joe Arpaio,
right,
pardon Scooter Libby, why wouldn't he pardon me? Then I hear all this stuff about in New York.
Scooter Libby was pardoned by Clinton?
Commuted by Bush, and then pardoned, I think, just recently by Trump, or at least indicated he was going to do
it. Wow. That's old school.
It was commuted. The difference between a commutation is if...
your record, you get, right?
Yeah, right. The commutation is you don't have to do the any further time. Pardon means it basically erases it.
Right.
So then the question is, well, if the president pardons me and I'm Michael Cohen, can I still be prosecuted by the state? Because there's an attorney general named Schneiderman in New York who's apparently cooperating himself in the investigation with Mueller. And there's this code section, we talked about this, the same one that was in California until recently, that says if you're, it basically applies double jeopardy to an outside jurisdiction. So if the feds, if you're adjudicated in federally, then you can't be prosecuted in the state. That was, for years, the law in New York, still is, they're trying to pass a bill. And in California, it was the same thing. In fact, I had a case many years ago. They called it Japanese OJ, and we were able to get the murder charge dismissed because he was acquitted in Japan on the same murder case or the same murder charge. And then they kind of went in and changed the law. That's what they're trying to do in New York. So, yes, he's got a long way to go to say that he's got an incentive to avoid doing any kind of time unless he thinks the pardon's going to be his safety net.
Well, can he... or his attorney ascertain in advance whether Trump will pardon or commute the sentence? I mean, look.
It's a good question. It's a great question, in fact, because would that be a obstruction, even though it's a completely lawful act? It's a lawful act by Trump, but is the coordination with Cohen to get him not to roll, is that obstruction? I don't think that that's been determined.
Well, it's a discussion you would probably want to have privately.
that's for sure.
But, I mean, you're an attorney. Like, my feeling would be, hey, listen, I don't want to roll over on the Don. On the other hand, I don't want to not see my family for 8 years. So tell the Don, as long as I have his assurance that he's going to pardon me, then I'll just go ahead and take what punishment they mete out. And then after my first night in prison, he'll get me out the next morning.
Well, I think that there's kind of a wink and a nod. I mean, I had always thought that why was he being the president, pardoning Arpaio before he even got sentenced? And I thought at the time it was to kind of send a message, stand tall, I'll take care of you. My guess is that somebody like John Dowd probably told him, John Dowd was his lawyer who resigned, probably told him, look, we don't want to have to make law here as to whether or not the mere act of pardoning and discussing it is a quid pro quo for obstruction purposes, or you did it with corrupt intent. So why do that? Just send a message. And so that's probably one of the reasons that he did that. And I thought, why Scooter Libby all of a sudden? It's not like he Scooter Libby, for those who don't remember, was the chief of staff for the Vice President Cheney and was a lawyer and had already gotten his law license back. So it wasn't like he wasn't practicing or doing anything else. He got commuted sentence and then his pardoned, and really has no practical effect because he had his rights restored.
How much time, when you get 10 years for money laundering and things of that nature, how much time do you actually have to do?
Well, if you were in the state court, you got 10 years in a jurisdiction like California, a state sentence, you'd probably do 50% at most. And, for instance, if you went to the fire camp, you'd be out in 36 months or 30 months if it's not a violent crime. In the federal system, they've abolished parole and those kinds of things. So you get good time, but you generally would do 85%, although there are programs that you can enter that will lop off time off of that. But you do substantial and real time on it. And they do it in terms of months. They generally don't say years. They'll say, okay, you get a 120-month sentence, or the sentencing guidelines, like a level 19, is 30 to 39 months, and the judge can pick a number anywhere in between.
I want to. I was watching Stormy Daniels' attorney on Bill Maher's show last weekend. He strikes me as a colossal douchebag, but I can't figure out why he seems like such a ginormous douchebag. But I was watching him, and I said to Lynette, I said, "Did this guy strike you as a douchebag?" And she said, "Yeah." And I was like, "But I don't exact. I mean, I know he's." He's arrogant, he's pompous, and he's confident, and he's self-assured, and all things you could say about Mark Garagus, perhaps.
Right, and there's many a person who has said Garagus is a colossal douchebag.
Yeah, the thing about you is you have all the makings of a world-class douchebag, but you're not. But you have all, you have all the ingredients.
I admit to that. I readily embrace that.
But why do I think this guy's such a douchebag? And then I'll tease it because I'm going to go into Marcia Clark here. He keeps explaining that, oh, boy, wait, stick around and wait for the party to really start on the present. Wait do we roll out our new model year? And I keep thinking, I don't get it. He had sex with this person one time and he paid her $130,000. And that was 9 years ago or whatever. What is this other thing? What is the rest of the show? He's, this is the tip of the iceberg. Wait till we show you the whole iceberg. You're going to love it. Or has he got some P.T. Barnum in him? And we'll figure it all out. First, I'll tell you about Marcia Clark Investigates, the First 48 new original docuseries. New episodes Thursdays, 9 o'clock on A&E. Marcia Clark delves into some of America's most shocking unsolved crimes or controversial verdicts. Each two-hour episode explores a different investigation, taking an in-depth look at the first 48 hours after the crime to uncover new revelations and angles. Controversial murder cases include Casey Anthony's daughter, Kaylee, Chandra Levy, Robert Blake's wife, Bonnie Lee Backley. Also, Run DMC's Jam Master Jay and Drew Peterson's wife. I forgot about her. I think she drowned in the bathtub.
Right. Remember Drew Peterson? That was quite
He was a delight. he'll be missed even if he's here. Thursday nights at 9 o'clock on A&E. That's Marcia Clark Investigates the First 48. So, this guy, my douchebag meter pegs in the red when Stormy Daniels' attorney starts speaking, and I can't quite figure out why, but just how he rubs me. And then what is he talking about with, just wait until you hear the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say.
Well, look, I know Michael. I've met Michael, and actually he's very charming, and he's effective. I think Judge G just took away his big verdict. He got a huge punitive damages verdict on a case, 400 something million, a couple of years ago. And I think it's wound its way around and she slashed it to 20 million or something like that. He was an effective jury trial lawyer. He's been a lawyer for about 18 years and has I think it has had a, I think the LA Times did a long form piece on him. I think that he relishes the idea right now of engaging with Cohen and Trump kind of by proxy, and it certainly has raised his profile. I mean, if you're a trial lawyer and you get some big verdicts and you still have a profile where nobody knows who you are, it is awfully tempting to go down the rabbit hole of media personality. Having been there, done that myself, I get it. I think at this point, though, the fact that the Southern District has executed the search warrants, is pursuing the case on their own, gives him, is going to make him stay, and Stormy stay relevant, because at least by all accounts of what's being leaked, and this is, I always preface with that because you never know what the feds have, but by all accounts, it looks like it revolves around the McDougal woman and Stormy Daniels or Stephanie Clifford, whatever her name is, and that there's going to be, I think we talked about this early on during the investigation, it probably is going to revolve around what was called the SAR report, which is the suspicious activity report that First Republic Bank filed on him when he was doing the money off the credit line and then sending it to an LLC. That has all the earmarks of money laundering, and so that's what they're going to be looking around at.
What does Trump have to fear from Michael Avenatti?
I think that the thing that he's got literally nothing to fear from Avenatti if somebody would wake up in his camp and realize that suing her and then having it removed and filing what's called a declaratory relief action makes absolutely no sense. There's no end game, because now what happens? You're in front of Judge Otero. Now you've got to assert that your Fifth Amendment rights, at the same time that you're the one who's asking for the judge to make a declaration that she can't speak or compel it to arbitration. She's already spoken. I mean, the more intelligent approach there would have been just to ignore it. Okay, she said her piece, call her a liar, don't call her a liar so you don't get into a defamation case, and let it just go away. I think we've said this and we've talked about this, I don't understand the end game from the Trump camp. Why do you keep giving this breathing oxygen into this story?
Right. It's always my sort of stray cat in the backyard. Just don't put the saucer milk out for 3 nights and you'll never see the cat again.
Exactly. Because it's going to get the mouse and go on its way to the next yard with another mouse.
I mean, you just starve these things of oxygen and they just go away, including the news. An interesting inside tidbit of information that I got from some guys that are pretty deep inside the Beltway, I was just speaking to a few hours ago. Some information about Trump and some theories about North Korea. And basically the thought was this whole North Korea, South Korea come together and bury the nukes and break the bread and bury the hatchet. By the way, I don't know if we can say bury the hatchet when it comes to Koreans,
because
I don't
like saying off the reservation. You can't say bury the hatchet.
Also doesn't
off the reservation. Can't say too many chiefs, not enough Indians. Those are
no,
all
but I don't think you can talk about what are you guys doing on the 4th of July either. I don't know that bury the hatchet makes any sense to them. But either way, they're going to break the bread
and
there's some people that have gluten allergies and so that's offensive to that group, so no more breaking.
Hold on. But you know what I wanted to tell you? Did you know that attorneys are expensive?
Yes.
I want you to know, by the way, Gary gave me a script to read for LegalZoom, right?
Yep.
Because we do that. And it says attorneys are expensive. Guess how much an hour they put down as the hourly for showing that it's expensive.
Well, I can tell you in advance This would be like someone saying finished carpenters are expensive. They went up to $3 an hour. And
right,
I would go,
what? Exactly
are
what
you kidding?
Is.
You wouldn't give
that's
me the,
right.
I wouldn't put a piece of cove molding up for under 40 bucks an hour. How dare you? So when you see $300 an hour, you're like.
Right. I'm saying $300 an hour, I charge that much for some guy who's still wet behind the ears from law school.
There's a line. There will be a line item with Garrigus. There'll be an expense for the guy who's in charge of polishing his cufflinks. Before he goes into court, he has to look his best.
And that's one reason that smart business owners turn to LegalZoom, because they know $300 an hour is the floor, hardly the ceiling. 2 million plus Americans, that's a pretty good stat, have used LegalZoom to start their businesses with LLCs, incorporation, and more. But LegalZoom doesn't help you just before you set up the business. It helps you after. Lease agreements, NDAs, tax laws, contract reviews. They created their business legal plan, legal advice for your business, with vetted independent attorneys and tax professionals available in every state. You won't get charged by the hour, since LegalZoom isn't a law firm, just one low upfront price. Right, Gary?
That is right. Check out LegalZoom's business legal plan at LegalZoom.com now and get special savings when you enter doubt at checkout. LegalZoom, where life meets legal, LegalZoom.com.
So on the Trump topic of Trump, these insider guys were saying, the deal's basically done with North Korea and South Korea, and they're going to announce that, after 50 years or, 68 years or whatever, 66 years. I'm trying to think when the Korean, 1950, 1951 or something like that.
Right.
It never really ended. We just stopped. 53 years, is this, Gary?
No, I'm sorry. 53 was when it ended.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I'm right. All right. So
65 years.
They finally put an end to this whole thing, and that will be perfect timing for the next election cycle. And it's kind of like, no one will care about Stormy Daniels. They'll just care if the economy's going good and no more nuclear threat from North Korea. You can have another 4 years, Mr. Trump.
I'm telling you, and you're not going to get impeached because the midterms are going to swing immediately. It's all, as long as peace is happening in the world and the economy is good, it's very rare to throw a president out.
It harkened back to the hostages, the Iranian hostages who were there for 375 days or whatever the hell it was, 415 days or whatever it was. And then Reagan got in there and Reagan got him out. But it was really just a purely timed thing. Because Carter couldn't get him out after a year, and then Reagan gets him in there and gets him out, and then he looks like a hero. And there's a lot of that optics that goes on with politicians. And you think about it, you get North Korea to denuclearize, and the economy's going good, and jobs are created. You can bang all the whores you want.
I thought it was an adult film star.
She's an adult film actress. I like the idea that they're actresses. How can you do your lines with that cock in your mouth? So, Mark, that's the latest with Trump.
Now, I have one other. Can we do one other Trump talk?
Sure.
This one I take personally. Do you know who he nominated to head the VA, White House physician, Ronnie Jackson. Have you seen this story?
I know there's the guy who did his physical.
Right, that's him.
And then I saw him pop up again on the news, but that's what he was doing.
The head of the VA. Mm-hmm. And do you know what the controversy is? People are complaining that apparently that he drank too much on several occasions, been there, done that, and that it was a hostile work environment because he raised his voice. Would you say that those two accusations could be leveled at yours truly and you?
Oh, my God.
Have you raised your voice in your work environment?
I do it all the time. I do it all the time. It's mainly because people make dumb arguments with me. But
Right. And it's just, this is what I understand. Why do you get immunized from being yelled at if you're an idiot? I don't understand this. And why do you take it so personally? I mean, did you never play high school football? I mean, you played high school football. Can you imagine how many times the coach slap you in the helmet or tell you you were a dumb fuck or, you know, that you were dropped on your head? I mean, I can't even imagine. Did you go, I can't. Coach Wood yelled at me. I can't go on.
Yeah, no, I don't get it. But also, if you don't want to be yelled at, don't come back with the stupid, you know, I did the best I could do, or there's nothing I could do, or any of the stuff like that. Just eat it and move on.
Right. And then he drank too much. The guy's a physician. By the way, some of the hardest drinkers I know are doctors.
Oh, well, yeah. Drew at Gary's wedding.
Oh, my God. We
out of his mind.
Okay, Gary, can we go there?
I got you. Go for it. He told me he couldn't make. Yeah, he was a mess.
He couldn't make what?
There was an event the next morning that we included him in as well, and he came in apologizing, said there was no chance he could go anywhere on Sunday.
He's such a lightweight. I told you he showed up at my shop on Monday instead of Sunday night. He's out of control. Physician, heal thyself is what I said.
He's usually the most rigorous drinker I've ever seen, in the sense that it's like a glass of wine, or at most, when he really wants to cut loose, a glass and a half, and that's it. And you could pour it for him, and it doesn't matter. He's not having another.
So what is the knock on this guy who looks like, you know, sort of if Opie Taylor, Ron Howard's character from and the Andy Griffith Show became a doctor and was 45 years old. That's what this guy appears. He looks like a Cub Scout to me, or Boy
right?
Scout.
And here's the allegations. Excessive drinking.
What does that mean?
Whistleblowers who said excessive drinking by Jackson and a negative work environment. Now, mind you, do you know who these people are? They're whistleblowers in the White House medical staff. And my question is, are they nurses? Are they drinking in the medical staff? Are they drinking the rubbing alcohol? I don't understand. And how do you have a negative work environment? How many people could possibly be on the medical staff?
Well, I'll tell you this. Gary will look it up. I'm sure... They would, you know who else they would have said this about? They would have said this about Winston Churchill. They would have said,
Smokes cigars, drinks, he's fat, likes to eat,
likes to yell at people.
At people, flatulence.
And here's my point. I like a guy who gets the job done. And if you got to yell at a few underlings, and probably a guy who's in the military probably tends to do that. And if you want to tilt a few and you want to smoke a cigar, that's all fine with me. As long as you're beating the Nazis and as long as you're doing your job and kicking ass. I don't even know. I was watching a commercial the other day for our next governor and Gavin Newsom. It was Gavin Newsom. And the entire commercial.
I'll bet you Gavin doesn't excessively drink, nor does he have a hostile or negative.
No,
they didn't even say hostile. They said negative work environment.
He's literally, all he is he's concerned about gay marriage and legalized marijuana or whatever it is. It's nothing. It's all just a big sack of good vibes. And that's it. You don't hear anything about the economy. You don't hear anything about taxes. You don't hear anything about the future.
Well, I have a question. First of all, you're dealing with Veteran Affairs. Do you want somebody who doesn't drink and who doesn't yell running the largest medical provider for veterans who have a high incidence or higher incidence than any other subportion of the population of PTSD. Wouldn't you want somebody who could at least relate to the fact, give me a drink? Give me a drink.
I like this guy. I like all the anyone who gets the job done. Again, look no further than Winston Churchill. All he did is drink, all he did is yell, and all he did is win World War II. Oh, wait, do we have Gavin's commercial? You can look forward to how much time you spent on the homeless population and your taxes. I'll play it.
The LA Times called Gavin Newsom ahead of the pack, from gay marriage to gun control. The first mayor to recognize marriage equality. The first to provide health care to every resident. The first to take on the National Rifle Association and win. The one candidate with a record of bold leadership and bold results. It's why Kamala Harris, teachers, nurses, and firefighters support Gavin Newsom for governor. Courage for a change.
Big, fat, unfunded pensions is why the teachers and the nurses and the firefighters support. And they're going to get paid. They can retire at 50, full benefits. What's insane about California?
Yeah.
How big an impact is gay marriage in your life?
Yeah. Well, this is what I was going to say.
60%? 80%?
Yeah, I was going to say, gay marriage was a done issue when my kids, who are now in their 20s, were growing up, because they could not understand why it was an issue. And I knew then that it was no longer going to be an issue. And by the way, if you're the mayor of San Francisco, coming out pro-gay marriage is not exactly a profile in courage. And I was just going to contrast it with Dianne Feinstein, who I'm also not a huge fan of, but at least she, you know, when she was in San Francisco, took a pro-death penalty stance. And I'm on the other side of the fence of that. But that didn't endear her. That, to me, is more courageous if you're a politician. It's almost like saying, if there's some guy from Alabama that is a notoriously pro-Second Amendment state who's advocating for gun control, that, to me, is more of a profile in courage than somebody who's from San Francisco making the argument for pro-gay marriage.
It does. But hold on. Slow your roll, Mark. He took on the NRA.
In San Francisco.
Yeah. He's also pro-Joe Montana and Jerry Rice.
Right.
What an ass. He's got the courage to lead. He's bold. It's a bold leadership. I hate that guy.
Okay, now, my next topic that I want to talk about. You know who Meek Mill is?
Yeah, the rapper.
Apparently, Meek Mill was granted bail this week, and the DA is seeking a new trial, which is fascinating to me that you've got the owner of the Robert Kraft visiting Meek Mill in prison, who apparently was taken there with the owner of the Philadelphia 76ers. There's a little cross-pollination in professional.
I can give you guys a little update. The 76ers owner just arrived at prison in a helicopter to take Meek Mill to the game tonight. There's a Sixers playoff game tonight that he's going to be guest of honor at.
What? Yeah. All right. What did he do?
I'd like to ask my client, Colin Kaepernick, what he feels about Robert Kraft going and visiting Meek Mill, who's in prison, at the same time that nobody in the NFL has signed Colin Kaepernick. But that's just me, you know, being
what?
That guy.
Let me ask this, Mark. How much all right, so I'll weave this in. I'll weave this into the overall gestalt of the Kaepernick and the NFL and all this kind of stuff. You have this culture, which is the black culture, and let's say it's the NBA, and now the teams are coached oftentimes and owned and run by older white guys, right? So now you get Greg Popovich, and he's got to be interviewed, and he can't say, oh, come on, there's no racism in the country. These guys should stand, and what's the big hubbub about? And, you know, that died years ago with Jim Crow. He has a whole locker room filled with a culture, And I believe that Popovich believes it. But I'm saying, if you're Jerry Jones, you probably think one thing, but you also realize, hey, 70% of the league is African-American. 70% of my locker have a black quarterback. You know, there's this culture going on, and then there's optics. And so I think when you go into the locker room and they're playing rap music, you have to pretend to like it, because if you go, well, put on some Guy Lombardo or some Les Brown or something, put on something I can dance to from the 40s.
Brown and his band of renown, yes.
I'm digging deep for that, but what about Tommy Dorsey? Haven't you kids heard of Tommy Dorsey? So here's my thing.
How much
of it is sort of old white guy going, I got a whole culture of young black guys, and I'm sort of the dad, and I can't come across like some plantation owner who's out of touch. I got to be down with what's hip and what's now. Like, or does Robert Kraft love Meek Mill?
So now I've got to kind of weave through a protective order, which is I'm literally bursting, because I did Jerry Jones's deposition, and we hit on this exact issue. Ben just finished doing another owner's, and we also did the Houston, Texas owner. And my takeaway, hypothetically speaking, without revealing any deposition transcript, which is protected by the order, is hypothetically, I would say that Popovich is genuine, and some of the others aforementioned don't really look all that genuine.
Right.
As far as I would go.
Well, they're in a weird position. They're 80-year-old billionaires, and their entire, most of their workforce are 24-year-old black men from the inner city who would never, they would never have an exchange of ideas at the country club. And you can't, you know, you have to come across as a certain way. So now we're back to Meek Mill. What's Meek Mill in for, Gary?
Probation violation. Stemming.
It's a PV, right?
Yeah.
And the judge was kind of off the reservation. I violated.
He's been claiming that the judge asked him to shout her out in a song, and when he didn't, she was being punitive against him.
Right.
There's a bunch of weird stuff, but it's ultimately a probation violation from a long past drug and gun.
One of the longest standing probation. But you know what? I feel for the judge in this instance.
Sorry.
Because it took me 33 years before one of my clients shouted me out in a song. And, you know, I always thought I deserved it much earlier than that. I mean, why did I have to wait 33 years to get a shout out in a song?
Why did
Chris, when he gave me the shout out, why did he have to say, fuck the judge, fuck the sentence? I mean, couldn't he have just done something and just said, I like Mark or something like that?
Yeah, if I ever get back into rapping.
Yeah. Would you at least give me a shout out?
I would at least give you a shout out, and I may even toss
in. Without saying fuck the judge and fuck the sentence.
No, I might do, I'm trying to figure out what rhymes with Tenny and Paulette and the dog. Does Robert Kraft love Meek Mill, or does Robert Kraft need to be the cool owner?
I think this is the cool dad syndrome.
And,
because
yes.
Otherwise, how do you reconcile that with the fact that there's an obvious conspiracy? Because nobody, I think, understands what the word collusion means. There's an obvious conspiracy to keep out the guy who was exercising his First Amendment rights, when at the same time welcoming back somebody who went to prison for fighting with dogs, or somebody who was in an elevator and knocked out his significant other.
Ray Rice.
Ray Rice. You know, I mean, I could go on and on and on. I mean, there's, I think, a current member of the NFL who's his team did not suspend him when he is actively under investigation for repeated domestic violence.
Repeated, you say domestic violence?
Yeah.
Well, there was Jerry Jones brought over the defensive lineman who basically, I don't know, you know, threw an Uzi at his girlfriend and then threatened her with another one or whatever. That guy, I think he may be out of the league, but you remember, and I'm sure you've refreshed your memory over the past few months, that when Jerry Jones brought in that defensive lineman a couple of seasons ago, that guy had a whole bunch of domestic abuse raps going on, and his stuff was literally involved piles of, you know, automatic weapons and smacking her with a gun and threatening her with a gun. It was a crazy story.
It's an interesting mindset that certain things are okay, certain things are anathema, and it's an interesting time we live in as to the hierarchy of those things. I think history, when they look back at this time, is going to think that maybe we're kind of clinically insane on a number of levels.
Greg Hardy, I'm sure you may have come across his name. Looking up all the rogues gallery of horrible individuals that were traded or let back in the league or, like, again, picked up by Jerry Jones. So I'll tease this, and I'll tell you about Penguin Random House audio. But so when the owner of the 76ers delivers a helicopter to pick up Meek Mill, is he doing it to keep his to curry favor with his players, or does this guy actually sit around and listen to Meek Mill? We'll answer that, although we probably already answered it all in our own heads. First, I'll tell you about Penguin Random House Audio. Reasonable Doubt is brought to you by Penguin Random House Audio. Love a mystery series? Try listening to the audiobook, huh? Main characters come to life while listening to the latest novels by Janet Ivanovich and John Sanford. It's the best way to absorb a book. You put the earbuds in, you get your audiobook, you hit the road, you walk your dog, you're on a flight, whatever. It's like you're getting filled with knowledge while you're on that flight or walking that dog or doing whatever you got to do. Audiobooks, great way to keep up with your favorite series, and you'll be ready for your next book by the time it hits the stands. Visit penguinrandomhouseaudio.com/series for a free audiobook sampler by Janet Ivanovich and Randy Wayne. Oh, Randy Wayne White. Oh, sorry, Randy Wayne White. I was on, jumped the page for a second. John Sanford and more. Anyway, penguinrandomhouseaudio.com/series, and you can check it out for free. So there's a big problem. Trump's the president. There's big kind of culture wars going on out in our society, and these guys have to keep things cool in the house, right?
It's a fine line that has to be walked in this current milieu, for lack of a boy, I wish I could quote the page number and line on some of this stuff. I'm you're smack dab in the middle of what I'm doing. So I'm gonna pivot. You know where I'm gonna pivot to? I'm gonna pivot to, do you think Jeff Sessions, what's your read on? As you know, he's the attorney general and he's recused himself from the Russian probe, but he has not recused himself from Michael Cohen's case. So we're going to come full circle here, the end of Reasonable Doubt. It's, now, the recusal for Russia was that he was a potential witness, he was also on the transition team, and that he potentially could have been in the mix on that case. How do you think, I mean, you know, because one of the standards for recusal is an actual conflict of interest or the appearance of impropriety. So that term is kind of like a reasonableness standard. Do you think it appears improper for Jeff Sessions to not step away when they're dealing with Michael Cohen?
I wish I had a good answer for that. I suppose I have a feeling you do. I'm
I think it doesn't. I think it's a look, if I'm talking to him, I'm going to say, you know why I think this is the appearance of impropriety? It's a simple test. If you can't win no matter what you do, if you stay on the case, no matter what you do, if you file, you're a loser, meaning file charges, you authorize charges, and if you don't, then the fix is in, then that probably is the definition of the appearance of impropriety, is my feeling.
Well, Sessions is a Trump guy, right?
Correct. He was the first senator who came out to support Trump, got the attorney general pick, and Trump has not been shy about picking him apart for recusing himself in the Russian investigation.
What do you make of the Russia investigation, and then what do you make of some of the recent news about it, and then what do you make about Comey, and what do you make about them talking about the possibility of now going after some of the people, Loretta Lynch, Comey, I don't know, some of the Obama. I hear stuff like this was on Obama's watch, or he's the one who originally sought out the dossier, and so on and so forth. Like, where's it? Where are you on the likelihood of this thing turning around and blowing up in somebody's face?
Well, the guy who's got issues, I don't think is Comey, but I think McCabe clearly has got issues. And McCabe was the acting director at one point and then was kind of in the crosshairs of Trump. And now the Inspector General report came out and it was scathing in its critique of him. And then they referred it for criminal prosecution. Talk about a reversal of fortune. Here's a guy who had at least by all appearances from the outside, a squeaky clean reputation. And all of a sudden now he's probably going to spend whatever disposable income he's got on attorney's fees to defend him. And that is, I mean, you hate to, I especially, having defended, I've defended prosecutors, I've defended politicians, I've defended people in the public eye, and I will tell you, you don't wish that on your worst enemy. As the old expression goes, you can beat the rap but not the ride. And it's a kind of a devastating position to be in. And I really would not wish it on people.
Well,
has the worm turned? It has. I mean, I was talking with somebody when I was in New York the other day, another lawyer, and we were saying, who would have ever thought we'd live long enough to see the Republicans in a feeding frenzy about law enforcement? I mean, you know, there's a certain amount of, you know, wow.
Yeah, I know. I know. There were always. Yeah, I it's insane. And,
right.
You know, the thing that I think what we started off by saying when everything began, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, once they turn that magnifying glass on you and your records and your financial business and your business and your relationships and everything, once that Klieg light that's the spotlight with the magnifying glass attached to it goes to you, there is no escape.
Do you want me to give you an example of this?
Yes.
I was at Dunkin' Donuts this morning getting a coffee before going to the gym. And there's a crowd of guys that are in various trades that are there every morning. And I usually will sit and we'll chat. And they were talking about that subject came up. One of the usual responses is, oh, I got nothing. I don't do anything. There's nothing they can come after me for. It's only if you do something. You're kind of, you know, basically telling me I was delusional. I said, do you you work for the union? Yes. And what do? You're an electrician? Yeah. You ever do side jobs? Yes. When you do side jobs, do you do it for cash? Yeah. Do you report that cash? And I got to look like the fear that had been struck in his heart. And I said, that's what they do. They'll drill down. Doesn't take too many questions to get to what your weak spot is, and then all of a sudden you're a tax evader.
No, and since we now live in a place where they've just added 1,500 laws in the time we started this podcast, You are going to be in violation again. Because here's the thing. I'm going to leave this podcast studio and I'm going to drive home and God willing, I'm going to take a nap. Now, I most likely will not get a ticket. But if you assigned a highway patrol team to look at the surveillance tape and everyone write down every infraction that happened between my studio and the time I pulled into my driveway, you'd have 1,100 infractions.
Right. And then if you got a ticket for the 1,100 infractions, you'd have so many points that your license would get suspended. And then when your license is suspended and you drive on it, then you do it a first or a second time, then you'll have mandatory jail time, and it's a misdemeanor, so it's an actual crime, and then boom, 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 the parade of horribles.
And basically what I'm saying is I could drive here and back a million times and there'd be nothing, but if you assigned a special CHP officer and a committee and you give him a blank check and you had him monitor my driving, I'd never be able to drive again. And
exactly.
That's
exactly
the society we live in. All right, let me tell you about Susie Orman. You should check out her podcast, Women and Money, every Thursday on Podcast One, and download Women and Money at Podcast One and Apple Podcasts as well. Give a nice rate and review. I'm doing live shows everywhere. You go to amcroll.com and find out what theaters I'm coming to. Cleveland and Detroit and Portland and Seattle, and go to amcroll.com, find out about the Corolla drink stuff and all the stuff we have to offer. What do you got, Mark?
I got opening in 2 weeks, the Capri in Southampton. We've got Casa Tropicana in San Clemente, which Gary, I think, will vouch for, is about as picturesque a spot as you could be.
The best.
Prova Pizza, just ate there yesterday in Grand Central. I highly recommend the garlic knots, believe it or not. We've got opening at the Moxie in Times Square next month. And Chen'e, Mediterranean Tapas, downtown L.A. Just stop by.
So, till next time, I'm Corolla for Mark Garriga saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.